Hello, and welcome to Music Business. I am joined today with a very special guest, my very first guest on the Music Business podcast, Drumageddon. World touring, chart topping, Spotify dominating drummer. Drumageddon, he sells out shows literally across the globe. But my favorite fun fact about Drumageddon is the fact that he drummed for the Olympics. How cool is that? There are so many amazing artists that have done so many amazing venues, but how many people can say, and the Olympics? Add that to my resume. That's just like so cool. Industry that's just like iconic, legendary, but that's who you are. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Drumageddon, how are you today?
I am awesome, Morgan. Thanks for having me. Drumageddon here, drummer, DJ, do both at the same time. And yeah, the Olympics was a crazy story. I'll get into it. I wound up getting called for like a huge Europop artist. I did some gigs with her, you know, stateside, did a couple overseas. And then she actually wound up, you know, being approached. She got approached by the Olympic Committee. And then she, you know, basically, you know, took them out, wined them, dined them, the entire thing. And I get a call from her. She's a famous artist, you know, had a bunch of hits in like the 90s, you know, her name's Gala, you know, Freed from Desire, Let a Boy Cry, you know, big tunes over there. So they're like, absolutely, we want you to headline the Olympics. When I got the call, they called me and they're like, hey, do you want to play the Olympics? I'm like, what? Of course. Yeah. I mean, but you mean like a bar outside the Olympics or the after party? No, the actual Olympics. And I look at the calendar, they called me a week before the Olympics. So I'm like, you can't get visas in time. No, the Olympic Committee, this and that. It's like, oh, okay. I don't, sure. Yeah. I just said, yeah, of course I'm going to do it. But I was like, there's no way this is going to happen. So 2 days go by, heard nothing. 3 days go by, heard nothing. On the fourth day, we're talking 3 days before at this point, you know, they're like, all right, we're good to go. So, you know, we're getting the visas processed, but there's no flights. So we have to do 3 flights then. So we did flight. And then we literally just got to the hotel. We immediately jumped into the van. We went to the sound check at the Olympics. Then we actually had to drive an hour to go to the dance club in Russia. This was actually Sochi, the Winter Olympics. And we sound checked at the dance club, went back, played the Olympics. It was 6 million on TV, like 30,000 live. And then we immediately go and play the nightclub. And then we go directly to the airport and 3 flights out. And I'm like, did this even happen? And I had the picture to prove it. So yeah, that's the story. Rocked with Gala. It was just me, one other musician. And I basically drummed and DJed. He played some guitar and keys. And then it was the artist Gala and a couple dancers on a couple tunes. But yeah, massive like football field size stage, insane production. Really, really amazing trip. So yeah, Drumageddon.
That is insane. How amazing is that? How many artists, drummers, famous DJs can be like, have you done the Olympics yet? And you can be like, yes, I did. I have. That is so amazing. So just to give a little backstory to the audience, you and I have worked together in multiple capacities. Momo Entertainment, my record label, works with your releases on consulting as well as YouTube and Spotify playlisting. And we're going to get into a little bit of those today because those are just such fun topics that we enjoy talking about, don't we?
It's a necessary evil. Let's just leave it at that.
I didn't say social media. I was trying to make it more fun.
Yeah, right. Has it been 5 or 6? What is it? 2018? 2019, I think we started. I'm just looking back. Yeah, I think it was about 2019. So that's like 5, 6 years we've actually been working together. That's insane. Wow. Happy 5, 6 year, you know.
Happy 5, 6 year business anniversary. I love that.
Heck yeah. All right.
And you know what's amazing about that is we're going to talk about our accomplishments within those times. Because in addition to the Olympics, you have also done some things.
There's been a couple things. Yeah. Spotify is one of them. And I remember, you know, the beginning of, you know, us actually finally working together and everything. You know, we went online, met online. We appreciated each other's artistry.
Wait, we didn't meet from a dating website. No.
Say again? No, we did not meet on a dating website.
Okay, but I didn't think so. I'm like, shit, I've known you so long, I forgot. Because, like, that's not us. So I'm like, wait, where did we start? It was Instagram.
It was Instagram. And business-wise, you know, I have a business that I basically do, you know, digital marketing and social media for people. But I also run my own socials and I'm an influencer. And then, you know, Morgan obviously runs Momo Entertainment, which is a record label and helps artists and consults and manages and, you know, helps Spotify and YouTube. And I was, you know, right before the big shutdown, I was like, all right, I should probably start to release some tunes and everything. And I'm like, but if I'm going to release these songs, I'm going to get no plays and views on YouTube or on Spotify, because I didn't have any sort of fan base at that point. I had like maybe 3,000, 10,000 followers, 5,000, somewhere around that. And they were just my, you know, musician friends. And now I'm going to be doing this whole drummer DJ thing, doing EDM. Not quite their cup of tea. They like the organic live music stuff. So I was like, all right, so I'm starting from scratch. So I started all new accounts and then, you know, had the Spotify and put the photos up. But I was like, I don't even know where to begin. And I remember like us starting to talk. It's like, oh yeah, I help people with Spotify. It's like, thank God, let's try to do something. Let's figure this out, you know? And that's where we actually started the Spotify YouTube, because I had a drummer YouTube that did well just with me drumming. But this is me being an artist now. This is actually releasing, you know, original songs, my own remixes, you know, mashups and things like that. And that's where we actually jumped on with the Spotify. So that's, you know, it was definitely helpful. And I learned a lot in the whole process. So
I think as technology develops, we're constantly all learning a lot. And somebody that says they know it all clearly knows nothing. So I learned a lot with you along the journey as well. No doubt about that. Also, though, you had amazing visuals, amazing music videos, exciting, quick cuts. The songs were just perfect for Spotify streaming, perfect for playing live performances as well. Like, you hit all the pockets with your delivery of your music and the visuals. So that already made my job like a lot easier. I didn't really have to sell too much. And since you're a drummer and a DJ, it's really cool because you break through some of the clutter as a quote unquote normal artist, whatever that is these days. But you're so multi-dimensional outside of just being one thing, and especially in niche markets and areas such as electronic dance or just drummers themselves in that market alone, like you're the best of the best. So that made my job easy. And I think we had a great time on the journey of getting to, well, I'll let you take it away. What do you think I don't want to speak for you. What do you think your biggest success on Spotify is?
No, I appreciate all the kind words. And, you know, the amount that you worked and the amount that I worked was like incessant. And this is something that, you know, they don't tell you in music school or in business school. Once you're your boots on the ground doing this, you know, I remember, Morgan, you mentioned this pretty early on, and it really resonated with me from a conceptual standpoint. You know, whatever we're going to do, you know, whatever budgets we throw around, whatever, you know, energy, you know, we put towards an incentive of, okay, Spotify or YouTube, what's the story? And what's the overall brand story that you're telling with each individual story? So you're telling all these stories and you got to make sure that the entire thing is one story that people can really understand. So I do have a, you know, very specific look and visual. You know, that's something that really does help recognize, you know, be recognizable in a sea of noise. I do drum and DJ that is different. You know, my songs are a little bit grittier than some of the other people. There are some live drum elements and stuff, but it's like a whole thing. And then live, you know, it's a very intense, fun show. So yeah, all those things were very consciously developed to go to the big picture. But when you mentioned that, I was like, oh, that's a very strict marketing way of thinking. And if you take a step back and look at that, why do we need Spotify? Well, you need to have X number of monthly listeners and a good number of actual individual song plays and album plays and all that with good visuals and artwork and everything as a calling card. So then you can get booked and you can actually jump into the next level of even being seen by the press. If you don't have certain numbers on social media, on Spotify and things like that, YouTube, people won't even consider you as legit. And that was something that you and I had to start from scratch for Drumageddon. And, you know, we really did crush it because, you know, we went from like barely, like literally zero on Spotify to, I think it's like 3 million or 2.5 million now or something that we're up to already.
Your total catalog, I think, is somewhere around 50 million spins total across all platforms with all the songs. And if you think about starting from zero and then getting to 50 million in, you know, a relatively short period of time, because there was also times like the pandemic where we were releasing, but it wasn't live touring to kind of partner with that. So we had some challenges along the way. And to come out on top, for me, the coolest moment was in your career on Spotify, which really validated the work that we had put in, was getting on Today's Top Hits and Mint. Those two playlists and the amount of spins, I forget what we grossed that day. It was like maybe 50,000 in 24 hours.
Oh, yeah.
That's fun to see. And that's when it works counterclockwise to the work that you're putting into it. That's when you kind of get to sit back and enjoy, because everything that you rolled up the mountain until then is now working for you. And that was a really cool experience to get on those two playlists and see one of your records just fly overnight, like insane.
Yeah, but that was after seven other or eight other major campaigns. I think that might have been the Ice Cream Truck remix, or it was the Beatles remix, or one of the originals. Whatever it was after a campaign of so many other tunes. And you know, for anyone listening, for, you know, whoever's in the music business as manager or an artist, you know, it's a giant wheel that you have to basically roll up the hill. And you're constantly, you know, forcing this whole thing with each individual little thing you're doing. And eventually it's going to get to the top. You let it go and it's just going to go, you know. And then you're in the valley again. Then you have to do the next round. You know, then there's the next round.
Yeah.
You have to keep on. So no matter what, you're constantly putting that effort in so you get a return. And, you know, getting the return took a while. I only had like 8 or 9 releases. This was part of the brand story initially. You know, I can have a ton of releases. I have all these songs sitting around. I could have 1 million releases on and have nothing really even register on Spotify. Because if you're under 1,000 plays, it doesn't even show as having a play, you know. But I wanted to make sure that let me pick the 7 or 8 best tunes and really put all the effort into that to get the biggest and best numbers I can. And that helped me get press. That helped me get in front of, you know, BMG Records and get signed with them, major label. And that helped me be able to like remix the Beatles legitimately, which is cool because they bought George Harrison's catalog. He's the guitar player and one of the songwriters of the Beatles. He wrote Something and Here Comes the Sun. So those are fair game for me because of the BMG deal. And about all these things, and then, you know, through the social media and the influencing and things, after all the push and the effort, you know, Glow Water with Kylie Jenner, Dak Prescott, the Dallas Cowboys quarterback, you know, they signed me on. Having that have happen is like another one of those things. And then having an agency come after me and like, oh, Clicks Talent, they do TikTok and Instagram influencers. And they got me to do a campaign for Warner Brothers Films. And it was Lord of the Rings video game. These things just randomly popped up because of all the hard work that we did on Spotify and YouTube and then Instagram and then, you know, TikTok and any and all the platforms. But it started out at zero. Like, and I was just sitting there going like, how the heck do I do Spotify or YouTube if I'm going to be an artist 2018, 2019, when we first started talking? And you're like, oh, I do this all the time. Hey, let's sit down. You know, we did things like Submit Hub. We did Facebook ads. We did Instagram ads. We did YouTube and Google. You know, we did a lot of stuff in that realm. We both worked, started reaching out to influencers for influencer marketing, and then playlisting, which, you know, is a dirty word for some people in the music biz, but I'll let you handle it.
Don't tell them how we do it. Don't tell them. They have to be a client. No. Yeah. I mean, obviously that's what we do over here. at Momo Entertainment. And the playlisting was definitely a grind, but it was so fun to see because it was rewarding to see that when you plan your work and work your plan, you can get there, especially as like an independent artist. I mean, you just work your ass off morning, noon, and night. So you are just a joy to work with, and you're an easy client because you're already doing like 15 next steps before I can tell you to do them. And so it's like, you've already given me just such a foundation where I just have to like poop it over and it all works out. It's fantastic.
And I'm going to jump in and vice versa, because I've worked with so many people on the business side, you know, producing, music directing, and then obviously doing digital marketing, social media. And then also, you know, from being an artist now and working with you, oh my God, you're organized. You know things, you're intelligent, you have all this stuff put together, you know, you're able to like immediately jump on your laptop and go, all right, let's see, let's fix this, let's do that. Okay, let's tweak this, let's do that. Okay, you know, I hit these 10 people. Here's, you know, the entire plan. And then it's just, it's a pleasure to have two type A people who do know the artistry, who do know the music side, who are DJs, you know, and do things that are, you know, positive in the whole spin of the music industry, you know, knowing music for real, but also knowing business for real and being organized. You know, getting messy, you know, and getting chaotic, I mean, that's life. But having someone to count on for the organization while I'm organized too, it's that's part of the reason why I think everything that we've done together and individually has been going bigger and better than other people.
I would totally agree with that. I think what also helps our success and something that's very rare that I don't see every day in people in general, especially in the music industry, is the fact that we don't care who we're working with in regards to race, age, religion, creed, blah, blah, blah. We don't care who's on the other side. If they're in alignment with wanting to be rock stars, put in the work, create the most amazing things, and then release it to the world, we'll mess with them.
Oh, 100%.
You're just so non-judgmental, and I think we're both just non-judgmental. So when we're working with people, it's the right people because we don't give a crap about the rest. We just want the dopest fit for what we're trying to do, whether it is playlisting or collaborations or brand deals. Like those all have to look like what we represent. We do a really good job of that, staying true and also not giving a fuck who we work with as long as they're the best in the biz.
100%. And I'll jump on that too. Something that I found working, we both worked with so many artists, and it can be, you know, obviously the most chill, cool people. And sometimes it's real, you know, egomaniac, diva, whatever it is. It could be the whole spectrum. We've worked with all kinds of people doing what we do. But it is a real pleasure being able to be two people that have zero ego about any of this. It's just, we're going to be real and straight and upfront with people, whether we're working with them or we're working with each other. It's just positive vibes. It's like, hey, you know, real talk, you know, this kind of thing and this kind of thing. I tried it with these couple people. It doesn't work. If you want to try it, we can try it, but I don't think it's going to work. Okay, cool. Let's not do that then. And vice versa. It's like, hey, you know, let's try to do something crazy in New York for this, this, and this. Like, yeah, okay, cool. Let's try to do that. Let's give that a go, you know? And these are the things that are really positive to work together, especially, you know, individually and with our, you know, collective agencies and businesses, is not having an ego about it. And it allows whoever is working with them to actually fully express themselves. And me as Drumageddon, I've been able to fully express myself and be like, hey, I'd like to get this kind of a thing going on Spotify. And then we figured out 10 different ways to try to do it. We tried them all and we found the best ways. It's been really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. So pretty much we're awesome and perfect. And I also have to say that I'm so glad we did a podcast about how great we are, because we are pretty great. In addition to being organized and businessy, artistry, working well with others, all the things, we're a little crazy. because there was only one person that I could call to do what I think was one of our coolest acts yet, stunts yet, shows yet, was New York Fashion Week. I picked up the phone, I called you, and I was like, hey, you want to just drop some merch with this designer that I have in LA? And you're like, oh yeah, I got a venue for that. And we'll do a couple daytime shows. And I mean, it was just seamless. And it took a little bit of crazy because we live in, you know, New York, LA, you live in New York, I live in LA. We see fashion. Our friends have stylists. Like you have a stylist. Like I don't merit one, but like, you know, we have a stop, like, we're in the pulse of fashion, but as music artists, we are very far out of that pulse of fashion. And we're like, let's put ourselves into New York Fashion Week as artists and drop a merch line. You know, Dior's coming out with their brand new blah, blah, blah collection, but we're coming out with t-shirts, new t-shirts. Yes. But we made it so legit. We like elevated our basic merch. We had our backup dancers as models, which everybody loved. We sold out 2 daytime shows in Soho. We did Rumi Ballroom, sold out that night. I briefly thought I was actually going to go on a date with Pete Davidson, if you remember, amongst all this.
We're still working on it.
Yeah. I literally did think for a solid like couple days that like I was legit going to go on a date with Pete Davidson.
Really?
I'm like, we're going to meet backstage. Yeah. For the show. Cause it was like also like it was like a 9/11 charity event.
That's right. No, we actually had Pete Davidson as one of the people that we were trying to get. Yeah, that's right. I forgot.
And I was going to meet him backstage. 100%. Yeah. Yes. I was going to meet him backstage. I had this whole narrative in my head. I shared it with you at the time. You were aware of the plan because I told you to point him to my dressing room if you saw him.
Yes. Oh, that's funny. That was such a crazy thing. It was the 20th anniversary of 9/11. We did a massive charity event together, co-headlined. It was awesome. And it was like tons and tons of celebrities. There was a red carpet. There was, you know, the Fashion Week component that, you know, you just mentioned. And then we did our sets and they were really cool. You know, the big screens, you know, nightclub style and the, but yeah, I mean, we went through so many celebrity invites. Like I forgot that Pete Davidson, yeah, he was on there. I think Kevin Hart was on there also initial. And then I think Afro Man, if I recall, was one of the people that almost showed up. But instead it was like one of the sisters from Sister Sledge. You know, We Are Family. I think we had one of the Village
people. Oh, the
people.
YMCA guy? Yeah.
That's the YMCA. And then
I'm smarter than that in music.
It was super fun. And, you know, what a trip and everything. And, you know, but
and we also had the Gettys there. We had Gigi Gorgeous was there.
Yes.
We had some like Wall Street CEOs there. We had.
It was one of those cultural crazy moments that just randomly happened. And, you know, those are the things that are like New York and LA legend kind of stuff. But that whole, I just remember pulling up to the, we did the Fashion Week event, you know, we did 2. Actually, one was in the evening, I think, the night before, and one was daytime. But they both, like, when we showed up, were like, all right, so let's put, you know, I basically hooked us up with a dance crew that all looked hot like models, but instead they're going to dance in our lines, our, you know, cultural couture lines, or I'll say, you know, the elevated, you know, merch stuff that for Drumageddon and everything. And first, yeah.
So the idea was to have people buy the merch so they could dance in it. So we wanted to show the danceability, which was also kind of an oxymoron of Fashion Week, where people are walking around in these high fashion things where they can't see or move or anything. And here we are with just like backup dancers doing flips and shit down the runway. It was insane. The flips, the dance, the choreo, it was like a concert. Honestly, it was a mini Taylor Swift concert. And you got us on the official New York Fashion Week line up. And so we just had people that literally were like, I have no clue who you are, but I saw music and I saw the vibe and I had to attend. And I mean, we were in the heart of Soho. We were in location that you found us, heart.
But these shows sold out and you and I didn't really have to promote them. And now that's another thing that I'll say too. Like if you, this is the hard part of the entire process of marketing and branding and, you know, putting the dollars and cents and the budgets and the time, effort, and energy to something. If you didn't work on the product or the service that you're doing in the first place, if it's not really cool, if it's not really good, it has to be over the bar. And then maybe people are going to actually show up sometimes by themselves. These shows did like completely sold out. People couldn't get in and they all went nuts for the like, this is the craziest, best thing. We just went to like all the Dior's and all the Louis Vuittons and all this stuff. And this was the best show of Fashion Week. We loved it. Please let us know when, you know, do another one. We want to come back. And to have that happen, the merging of fashion, of, you know, DJ, EDM and music, and then the dance, that hasn't really happened in a good way. We kind of did it. So that's really freaking cool. You know? So if you have a product that is unique and different and cool, it does help sell itself. So then the marketing is only supporting instead of basically trying to like, there's that one meme where, you know, it's the guy kind of poking a stick going, come on, do something. It's almost like, you know, if it's dead on arrival, you can't fix things with marketing. But if there's something behind it with good music, a good image, good brand, good message, good story, all that, then you can blow things up. But that was an instance where it did actually blow up. And you and I are like, how did, this is amazing. It's sold out shows. Wow, great. So we have to do it again.
I think though, we also know more people than we think we do because we had some pretty, I'm going to say, I mean, our fashion designer, like he was way too cool for us, but he's like, okay, I'm down. Like our graphic designer was making invitations and labels and clothing and designs. And we were all like coming together. So the whole process, and then we're adding rhinestones and like getting custom stuff. And looking back, I'm actually like, how did we do that? And then more importantly, how do we better that? And how do we run it back? Let's make a commitment right now, this year, let's run it back and do it again, because we would do it so much harder, better, faster, stronger, knowing what we know now. It's almost like throwing your first show, filming your first music video. What a nightmare, you know, your first anything. And ours actually wasn't a nightmare. Like looking back, we knocked it out of the park for hopping into New York Fashion Week as two people that, let's say, our brands don't exactly scream high-end fashion.
No, they didn't. No, but it really did work. And that's a testament to coming up with some, you know, obviously having a product and a brand and, you know, an artistry that can actually come together in a positive way. And then you can collaborate with fashion designers, you can collaborate with, you know, brands and Fashion Week, you know, the big people, you know, coming through. And they're the biggest critics. And, you know, that's one of the benefits of being in New York and LA. We have the toughest crowds in the world times 100. You know, it's most people just going, impress me. You know, I've seen everything, impress me. And they were impressed. So that's a good thing, you know, and we've had that happen at a lot of shows that we've been doing individually and together. So it's been a really, you know, the live performance aspect is a real big deal. But yeah, for New York Fashion Week, us two people just walking in and kind of, you know, selling out, that was really cool. So, you know, I'm looking forward to doing some more. Definitely. That's huge.
I mean, we had a fashion show in Soho. Like you walked out of our door and it was like the Chanel fashion show. And then you walked in our door. It was amazing. Okay. So we're going to run it back. Commitment to ourselves. We're going to run it back this year. What do we need? I'm like, my checklist brain is already just firing off. We're going to need a location. We didn't have sponsors the first time, but I definitely think now based on where we also are in our careers, we have sponsors in general for things. So I think we should maybe look at incorporating and adding a couple sponsors that make sense to our fashion.
We're trying to do the best we possibly can, the most efficiently with the system and the process behind it. So we already had our first, you know, prototype run of this event. Now we can take what it is that we've done with that event, and now we can break it down into the individual pieces. Okay, promotion, we can probably pop this out onto, you know, more calendars than just this one Fashion Week calendar. Okay, that's probably a good idea. Okay, what else? All right, so then maybe we can run some of these, you know, a couple targeted ads with some of the hard tickets, and maybe, you know, actually have a higher ticket price this year because it is a little bit better and more exclusive. And then we approach, you know, the different sponsors in that entire thing, and they can help not only, you know, co-market, but we'll obviously do product drops, you know, give little gift bags and things like that. But we might be able to also work and get our music into some of their commercial campaigns. And that's something that could be really cool too. There's a lot of different ways, but basically taking the entire thing and looking at it as a total system and having a template of what we did initially and then tweaking the template for this time to be even more successful, that'd be huge. And these are the funny, crazy stories when you look back. It's like, that was insane. And, you know, it was really successful and it did elevate us and our individual brands, our company's brands, and then also like open doors that, and that's the other thing too, that I've been really trying to, you know, work on the patience of the whole process. Everything we're doing that's cool, everything that you're doing as an artist or a manager or a company also that's cool, will eventually spiral and pay off. And it's going to pay off. You push in over here, you push in over here, you push in over here. And then from over here, some random crazy big thing, you know, pops in. Like I've been pushing. All of a sudden, I just find out that Planet Fitness is now playing Say Less, Be More in all 2,600 locations in America. And since it got placed, it's gotten 25,000 plays in like a month and a half and is the number two play song of all time. I'm like, okay.
That's incredible. Like, well, congratulations on that.
But that's insane. But that's happened because of the Spotify campaigns, the YouTube campaigns. It's like the, you know, the music gods are smiling down on you. You know, if you're doing the right thing, pushing enough positive energy out there, there's going to be some give and take from things. You know, that's how the Olympics happened for me. Yeah, I did Olympics, but I did, I actually played Giant Stadium sold out to 82,500. And I remember getting that call. It was Thanksgiving, halftime show, crazy. You know, I was playing, I was looking up going like, all right, this is the biggest gig I'm ever going to do, whatever, you know. Then I get called a year later for the Olympics. I'm like, okay, I guess that's a big, so there's always going to be another big gig. But the day after I played the stadium sold out, I played a dive bar on Bleecker Street. Nobody showed up. It was just the bartender. And I had just as much fun playing both gigs. So at least I was doing the right thing, you know, feeling, you know, playing the same way I would play at both. But the these random big gigs that pop out, random big opportunities, are the things that are those special things happen when you're pushing all this other stuff in a positive way. And I know that's what happened with like the Fashion Week stuff and 9/11. It was the culmination of all the other stuff we've been doing. It's not just like you. If we started out and like, hey, in 2019, hey, we're going to do this, like we wouldn't be able to do it. It wouldn't have actually, we would hit walls. And those walls are now like windows to climb through, you know? So here we are.
And we're going to climb through them this New York Fashion Week.
Mm-hmm. And then we could also, I would like to, you know, take this whole concept with the dancers and us, you know, being able to do all this stuff and then try to go to Milan, try to go to some of the other Fashion Weeks and offer it to brands as a vendor service that could be, hey, we have a very specific process here and it's really good and it would elevate you and your brand and it's totally different and cool. Let's see if we could do it, you know, and that would be something cool to offer from the business standpoint and from the artist standpoint to get, you know, songs in there, to get, you know, the vision in there. So we'll say, let's see what we can do. Fashion Week New York first, and then let's see if we can scale it on up. You know, now we're going to, and this is the point where we could actually talk about where I'm doing this crazy new incentive where I'm going to go nuts so we can really look at every single thing that we do moving forward from the business side on releases to see what works and what doesn't 2025 onward, you know, so crazy.
I thank you for bringing this up. Since we love Spotify oh so much, we will end on your Spotify plan. I meant to talk about this during the Spotify portion. I forgot. Thank you for reminding me, because this is wild. When you told me this plan, I love to hear it. I had to process it because it's not an indie or a major label launch. I cannot do it justice by explaining it. May you please explain Spotify journey and what you're doing on Spotify. And it's on every platform, right? Like when we say Spotify, we're really just using that as the platform here, brand-wise, because we would like to get in their pockets and have them support us through our music and our podcasts. So therefore, we're using Spotify shamelessly. So they mess with us. At least I am. I mean, you are too. Let's call spade a spade. So when I'm saying Spotify, I'm really talking about all streaming platforms, right? What you're about to tell us, this exciting project that you're doing, what you're about to tell us is available to stream everywhere, wherever anybody listens to music, correct?
Yes. No, that's it. And I'll go into it. So here's the deal. Like being an artist, which, you know, one of the things that I found through this whole journey and process, I hit, you know, all the goals and then some, and we exceeded the goals every single time we've done everything. What I've noticed is it's taking a lot more time, effort, and energy to get to those goals, but they're all actualized. Whatever numbers we're trying to hit, whatever engagement we're trying to hit on a social, whatever it is, we can do it. What I noticed is life would be a little bit easier if you build only half the bridge sometimes and have that other, you know, bridge be built half from the platform itself and from fans and from other people, have a little bit more, you know, organic reach, viral reach, and things like that in the process. So, and we're not talking about, you know, specifically influencer marketing, which you can, you know, possibly have a song or something you do go viral. And it's not just me posting on socials, which has gone viral and all that stuff. I'm just saying, like, each platform, it would be nice to just be able to, say, release a song, have it work through the algorithm by itself, if it's a good song, hit the right people, and then actually do well. And I'm doing a very interesting, crazy experiment. I went back and I found all these hard drives of music, and I've been doing Drumageddon like 12, 15 years at this point, probably 13 years total. Just, you know, on the side in the background until the past, say, 5 years. 5 years I've been basically full time, and now this is all I do. This is the only music that I do and make and perform is through Drumageddon and that brand name, which is great because I used to play with other people too, and I used to produce some music direct people. But the plan is, and this is crazy, so I found 1,000 unfinished tracks. And I was like, all right, let me try to blow through the first 100. And let me see if I could just quickly jump on Canva, put together some cool artwork, taking all these thousands of photos that I have of me from the past 10 years. I just, you know, remove the background, put it together. Takes me 5-10 minutes max. And it comes out with a cool piece of art. It's like, okay, here's the artwork for the single. All right, now let's take this track and let me fix, you know, the vocal. Let me go through the whole thing. I'm like, oh, these are actually all really good tunes. But the tunes were just sitting there because the amount of time, effort, and energy I would need on a campaign. I looked back. I had 4 releases 1 year. The year after, I had 3. The year after that, I had 2. And then I had 1. Because it was so taxing, demanding, months and months of promo and hand delivering it, this and that. Screw it. I'm releasing 100 songs in 100 days, and I'm on song number whatever today is. I guess it's 26 songs as of today, and they're all hit song bangers that are in the archives that are now just being released. And as of midnight coming up, it's going to be song 27. I'm going to go through the first 100 tunes with zero promotion. This is literally just placing them on the platforms. The next 100 of the 1,000 tunes will be one campaign focusing on, we'll say, influencer marketing. Get into the hands of all the influencers, those next 100. Okay, then one after. Okay, Meta ads, the one after. Okay, Google ads, the one after, whatever it is, and really target every single thing analytically. Build the graphs, be able to look at all the data at the end of the entire run. So by 800, 900, maybe 1,000, that entire process, you take all of the things that worked and whatever budgets you spent, and you use that as your beta test, and then you put all the money to the things that worked all at the same time for those last couple hundred tunes. I think it's going to be million, 10 million, 100 million on individual songs now, instead of collectively. I think so. But I don't know until I actually go through the whole process. So I'm almost done with 100 currently, and I've been just scheduling them, and every day I get to, you know, drive around, go to the store, you know, pick up some food. I get to play all these cool new tunes that were just sitting around doing nothing. It's really cool, and there's no expectation. I'm not doing this through BMG. I'm doing the big, you know, releases through BMG. I'm doing the, you know, remixes and things like that through them. This, I'm just, you know, releasing myself, you know, through my agency and just putting them up on that first 100, and then I'm going to target everything. So ultimately, this is the craziest experiment, and I haven't heard of anyone being able to do this for more than 30 days. And in 3 or 4 more days, I'm beyond 30 already. So it's crazy. So I'm curious to see how it goes. And you've heard some of the tunes, right?
I have. I love them. And it's so funny because you think that there'd be a quality issue if you're dropping that amount of quantity. There is not. And that's a testament to who you are when you make your music. But these are super quality tunes. I did not know the level I was going to get. I know the level that I normally receive from you, but I did not know the commercial quality level I was going to get listening to a block of them at a time. I'm thinking, is this a Guinness Book of World Records opportunity?
I was actually, somebody reached out to me who does the Guinness Book of World Records, and they have a back end thing that, you know, if you come up with any ideas, they can help try to get the Guinness Book of World. I will ask, actually, maybe, like, how many releases would you need to do for Guinness? That's a good question. Yeah. And yeah, the quality, since I have everything on my, you know, Ableton and Pro Tools rig, you know, really, you know, I have my sound, you know, just like you have your sound, other people have their sound. It's built into my rig the way that I have everything set up. That's one thing. The other thing is Say Less, Be More is my template of my favorite song that I've, you know, done previously that has done the most and the best and biggest things. And I'm using that as a template for basically a positive anthem that you can sing along to, that you can, you know, play in a club and it still hits because of the sub bass and the bass, and it's gritty enough where it actually has some character. But the lyric has to be relatable. It has to be, you know, for the 20-something, 30-something people who want to kind of feel the, I don't know, the 2000s and 2010s kind of a vibe with modern production again. We don't have that going on right now. So I'm taking all these tunes that I wrote back then and finally releasing them. And I'm listening to them like, these are, there's some cool songs in here. And these are, if you listen to each one, it's like that could be a hit if you put enough campaign money behind it. So let's see if it reaches the people. It's, you know, it's smooth sailing on my end for the production and the uploading. We'll see on the analytics after the first 100 where we're at, you know. I don't know. We'll see. It's going to be a really awesome experiment. But at the end of the day, it's a powerful way to try to take back ownership as an artist and a, you know, music business professional. You know, like Momo Entertainment, you know, Morgan, you know, us actually being able to have a real experiment to see what really does work, how much it works. And if you do X amount of time, effort, energy, and budget in this one field, it looks like it's going to give you around this return. And then having that be part of our business in addition to helping other artists and everything, it's going to be really cool. So, and yeah, I just bit the bullet and just I'm doing it. But yeah, it's, you know, I'm going to have 100 out in 100 days and then 1,000 out in 1,000 days. So crazy. And they're all hits in my opinion. But, you know, what do I know?
Well, you've had a couple hits. I mean, Mint and today's top hits specifically, playlist wise. So I'd say you know a lot. When you told me this, I was like, dang, okay, let's get it. Let's see what happens. And if not, we need to write a letter.
If this literally, after the first 100, if nothing even has any sort of viral organic, you know, pop at all, there should be a letter being written. And then if it, you know, after 1,000, after pushing, you know, all the individual things and everything together, if we don't see like a million, 10 million or 100 million on a bunch or some of them, then there's an issue. And
we need to go to Congress and discuss this. This is a larger issue.
It's like, there's no reason that this shouldn't work given the input, given the product, the service, or whatever it is we're putting in, it should, but it might happen with Taylor Swift for different reasons than indie artist number one. So I don't know. So we'll see. I'm excited to do it. It's way more freeing. One of my biggest issues as an artist was all the pressure and intensity of 3 6-month campaigns, a year campaign to push a single tune. And, you know, I remember you mentioning early on at the beginning of this whole journey of us pushing stuff on Spotify and YouTube. It's like, yeah, we did that one. On to the next one. It's like, no, but we still have to push. I got to hit that one thing with the number and the engagement or whatever. And you're like, no, go to the next one. And this is me finally accepting that, going like, yeah, let's just always the next one. Let's put them all out. You know? So every day it's a new tune. It's really cool. So, and there are certain ones that I'm just really excited about, like on the, and these are on all streaming platforms. But we say Spotify to, you know, Spotify is still number one. iTunes is like number two. YouTube is number three, I think, as of now. Then it's Deezer and then some of the other ones. But the, you know, seeing all the art, hearing all the tunes, it's really cool. Like the Ice Cream remix was the last one that we really went nuts pushing together. And then, you know, I have a tune called NYC Queens, which is about basically, you know, badass girls in New York. We have California Girls by Katy Perry. This is the anthem for New York girls. You know, you got like,
and I jammed to it in Los Angeles today. I was walking down Santa Monica Boulevard and I was jamming to that song today.
And the lyrics are cool. You know, they're gritty. They're like, you know, lifting people up again. You know, Me, Myself, and I is a cool one because it's got the lyrics about, you know, like over like overconfidence in how good you are, which sometimes we could all use, you know. And it has, you know, some tongue in cheek. There's just a ton of really cool tunes now, and it's fun to actually have them all out at the same time. And then remixing and going back on some of my old tracks, like 3-Page Letter, you know, redoing those and making them sound, you know, more of what it is that I'm about.
You made 3-Page Letter sound like a totally,
No, 3-Page Letter, so good now. Like initially it was very, you know, vibey and very like introspective. And this, now it's kind of like, it sounds like Alan Walker. It sounds like a DJ track. It sounds like, you know, you could play it in the club. And the cool part is since I have so many tour dates, like each month I think I'm hitting about, 15, 20 gigs now, you know, at this point. It's like 2 or 3 a weekend, you know, everywhere. Every time I pull into a club now, you know, these are bigger clubs, you know, sold out with good systems. I'm able to go in and like play these tracks and then mix and master them. So I'm literally now going like, oh, let's hear this. And then, you know, the, you know, people at the venue are like, hey, what tune is, oh, it's my new track. What? Like, yeah, it's a new track I'm just working on. I'm going to try to release it. Like, okay, cool. So it's cool to hear the bass and try to, you know, tweak some of the mixes and masters, but, you know, Turn Me On, great track. You got like all these new tunes. There was one sound guy that loves dubstep, and I have kind of a dubsteppy, like a modern take on the dubstep thing called Don't Take It. And we were like headbanging to it. So again, like it's cool to actually have so many tunes out, because previously there were only a handful, two handfuls really, of us putting all of our eggs in those baskets. And now it's like, let all the children free. Go out into the world, spread the joy of Drumageddon.
I love that. And on that note, that's a great way to wrap Music Business. Wait, what did you just say?
Spread the good word of Drumageddon. By the time I'm done with this, I usually play about 2 minutes of a song before I mix in and out of them live. So I will have 1,000 songs that are original. And I'll be able to play for 33 hours straight. So that would be another Guinness Book of World Records. So if I can play a 33-hour gig and never repeat a song, that'd be cool.
You need to do that in like Ibiza or like a desert somewhere.
Yeah. Oh, Joshua Tree would be dope. That'd be cool, you know?
Yeah.
You'd have to come out and help me with that one. Jesus.
Well, yeah, you'd be too close not to if you're coming to the West Coast. Hell yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's awesome.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for taking the time today to be on Music Business. Drumageddon, everybody.
Thanks. And I'm just really stoked that I'm the first guest on this amazing new podcast. So shout out to Morgan. She crushes.
Talk about humbling. You've just recorded a podcast that like two people are going to listen to. So thank you for that.
Well,
we're back to basics.
We're the two people. This is great.
The two people.
It all starts somewhere, you know?
No, thank you for tuning in to Music Business. We will see you here next week with a new topic. And signing off, Momo Entertainment and Drumageddon.
Woo!